Welcome to the Color Authority. This is Judith Van Vliet podcasting out of Milan, and I'm excited for my talk today with Ramon Morato, the very first guest on my podcast who is not working directly in the field of design and color. Now, why is this? This is because he is one of the most famous pastry and chocolate chefs in the world. Yes. So he's born in Manlleu, Barcelona, into a family with no connections whatsoever to the world of confectionery. After completing his studies, Ramon Morato began his training in a number of different establishments. He combined his studies with numerous of courses offered at the School of the Barcelona Provincial Confectioners Association. And during a period of stages at several of the best Spanish confectioners, he also went to important schools and technical centers such as the ZDS Solingen and then to the Richard Conseil School in Lyon, France. Now, as a result of all these years of work, his experience, and his ongoing desire for innovation, he published Ramon Morato Chocolate, which won the best cookbook in the world on the subject of chocolate in 2007 at the Distinguished Gourmand World Cookbook Awards. More recently, in December 2016, he published the book 4-in-1 together with the chefs Raoul Bernal, Joseph Maria Ribet, and Miguel Guaro. On the occasion, indeed, of the celebration of the 20th anniversary of the Chocolate Academy in Barcelona. The possibility of connecting with many professionals in different fields gives him, indeed, the ample knowledge of the sector and helps him to realize his passion for teaching, researching, and creating products that are related to the world of confectionery. In recent years, this also brought him to teach courses, seminars, and conferences all around the world, as well as special endeavors such as the collaboration project with Harvard University through the Alicia Foundation. Today, he is still creative director of the cacao berry brand. So good morning, Ramon. How are you today? And welcome to the Color Authority.
I'm really well, Judith, and thanks for your invitation.
So we met a couple of years ago, and although you are one of my first guests on the Color Authority that is not a color or design professional, I'm still going to ask you the same question I ask all of my guests. I think that's fair. What is color to you?
Well, I don't know if what I'm going to say is stupid, but I think color is a form of communication. The same thing happens with my work. Through our creations, we are communicating something to our clients. And the truth is that I am not very aware of, but a while ago in Milan, you opened my eyes to discover that there's a whole world behind color, a world from which chefs should really learn more.
Yes, well, I hope and I open indeed, not just your eyes, but the eyes of indeed all of those chefs. So we met in 2017, indeed, during the opening of the Chocolate Academy in Milan. It's an experience I will never forget. Standing in front of 50 or more international pastry chefs in, of course, a professional kitchen, which normally I'm standing on a stage, you know, in front of, you know, design audiences in conferences. But it was really an amazing environment. And I presented the color trends. And after that, you all went into your kitchens and you created beautiful things. And I just remember that I had a huge sugar rush because obviously I tasted everything that you guys were creating. But if you look at just generally during that day, I felt so connected with your world, even though it seems different from mine. But when you look at creativity of the chefs, in my opinion, it's directly linked as well to designers because we are deeply connected with our senses. And while I may be more connected to my visual and haptic senses, so maybe touch, you use enhanced senses that go well beyond the visual. How do you immerse your customers into this domain?
Well, this is a very timely question considering that we are living a moment of emergence of social media. And it seems that the important thing is only the visual and the likes. But chefs really work on the visual because it is the first impact, but definitely the flavor is the king. There are no excuses here. So first thing is always and should be always the taste. And along with the flavor, the smell, the textures linked to the sound when tasting, and the fact of creating a dessert or a bonbon to start with the texture, and as you taste it, more appear and things happen in that sensory journey. We are really lucky to be able to make people happy through our creations. And look at this, there are many professions that do not have this possibility that we have ourselves.
That's true. I think also, you know, when you look at indeed pastry chefs, chocolate chefs, and indeed designers, we have this possibility, and we both are lucky to also live our dream job.
Yes, it's true. It's true. Have the possibility to make the people happy through the creations, through the fact that at the end, pastry is a sensorial experience, is something that it changed my life in the beginning, because this is why I'm pastry chef.
So I'm quite sure that most of my listeners are indeed design professionals, but I'm sure that when people know that we're going to be talking about pastry and chocolate in general, there's going to be more people that are indeed tuning into this conversation. But for those who are not familiar with, you know, what a pastry chef does, what does a day for you look like working in Barcelona, in Catalonia?
First of all, let me say that I always say that I am from Barcelona, but I really live in the Barcelona region, but I live in the north, 1 hour in the north of Barcelona. Mm. I live in an area where there are more pigs than people. And there's a large meat industry behind, and this is where I live it and grew up, and where is my work linked to a chocolate brand such as Cacao Barry, because we have the factory here. But for me, Barcelona city is like a fresh air. And every time I visit the city, I return then to Portland with no ideas. Because Barcelona, I think that like Milano, is a city with a great culture, with design. And design for me is one of my first inspirations. The forms, the colors linked to design. I love beautiful things. I have no idea on design, but I love the beautiful things, and I try to do beautiful things when I transform maybe these possible ideas or visuals that turn through the design to my desks, no? And I really like to work with designers, and our day-to-day is, every day is different, because we don't have really a routine job. When we start a new project, for example, we need always some days to explore, no? The exploration phase, then the product development, which is test and test and test in the kitchen, maybe because we have a new launch or because we receive a new product and we need to make some tests with this new product to create new recipes. At the end, the important day or the last day is the day of the pictures at the end. It's a photo shoot. So the day that we make the photo shoot to have the beautiful pictures to be used in the catalogs or in the launch or things like this is our last day. And then the people of the team start to make all the catalogs and all the things. But yeah, I can say that there's no routine in my life. And this is something beautiful.
Yeah, I think routine indeed is something that kills creativity and inspiration as well. So you, just like me, I just for those who don't know, I studied political science and I ended up working in color, but you have a different journey to your job as well, to your profession, because it was all by accident, right?
Yes, true. I was studying to become industrial mechanics, because in this region, apart porks, there's also a lot of industry on mechanics and to make industrial pieces for the cars. Just on weekends, I started working in a pastry shop and I really love it. I found my way there, combining flour, sugar, butter, things, and at the end, from the oven, or it appears a product. For me, it was like, when I was 16 years, it was like magic, saying, wow, look at combining things, you make a product, no? I really love it, and I started in this really small pastry shop, and then I continued my career, but yeah, it was just an accident.
Yeah, it's funny how indeed you moved from industrial mechanics to something very technical and then to something that is so full of, let's say, a different type of creativity, but also it's very detailed. The world of pastry is detailed. You need to have a very fine hand to work on your bonbons or on your dessert. So it feels like it's really two different worlds apart.
Yeah, and let me say just one thing, Judith, because when I tell to my parents that I want to start in pastry and not continue the industrial mechanics studies, they tell me, no, it's not possible, Ramon. I remember a meeting in the kitchen of my house saying, no, but you are sure? Because at this time, look at today, be a cook or be a pastry chef is more sexy than 20 years ago. And the first recommendation from my parents, it was, okay, if you want to be a pastry chef, you should study, you should make a career. But at this time, there's no schools. There's not really official schools. So you cannot go to the university to study pastry. No? But fortunately, the things change. And today, the perception of our profession is better than in the past.
It's completely better. I mean, you look at, you know, and it's not just the, let's say, the commercialization of chefs, because you have MasterChef, you know, you have all the programs on television, of course, which obviously it helps. But pastry chefs and chocolate chefs are almost among like big influencers in this world. So I'd say a lot has changed. How do your parents now see your job? Are they happy that you changed direction?
Yeah. They are really happy. They are really happy. And when I have the possibility to make things like books or appear in some TV show or things like this, they are super happy. Yeah. And at the end, they see that I find my way and I'm really happy with this decision. So, yeah.
That's most important, you know, because you need to follow your intuition and your passion. But it's nice, of course, that you have the support of friends and family. And then you decided at a certain point to specialize in chocolate. What inspired you to choose this very particular direction in pastry?
Because, look, I'm a lucky man. And this was also a coincidence. It was I was just participating in a pastry contest to select the best pastry chef in Spain, and I meet during the contest a person who changed my life. Then I was lucky. I won the contest, and after a few days, I received a call from this man with an offer to start in a small chocolate company called Chocovic, just 1 kilometer to my house. Mm-hmm. And then I started in this company and I still working for this company because this company was part of the group of Barry Callebaut. And this is why I am specialized in chocolate, because I started in this company, we created the school, and during 20 years I managed the school called Aula Chocovic, which is the chocolate academy in Spain today.
Yeah, it's an amazing journey indeed. And it is beautiful that indeed your direction within your profession has all been by coincidence. So you have been flowing towards your passion. Now, Cacao Barry taps into the trends of the food industry to understand what type of foods consumers are currently preferring. How do you research your trends personally, or how do you know what to create and how this is related to what people are craving to eat today?
Look at, I always say that I'm a typical chef working inside a chocolate company and together with the marketing team. So I'm a kind of a strange animal, Judy, because normally a chef has your own pastry shop or your own restaurant, or is working for others, or working in a hotel or things like this. But myself, I work for a company, and working inside a company selling products, I work together inside the marketing team. This means that I'm always in between the two worlds, the world of the chefs, working in the kitchen, making tests, developing products, let's say creativity, and I work together with the marketingians. And I really learn a lot from the marketingians in the way that they work with trends. They start to analyze the market, they start to analyze the customers. So this part is super interesting for me, and the possibility of having this information about new trends and doing things that you may not do the same without this kind of a dialogue with these people, no? And at the end, what I do is myself, I receive this information, I process this information, and I try to convert this information in products.
Yeah. So what trends do you see arising in the food market? So what trends is Cacao Barry tapping into? And how do you implement these movements in society and into your work, into your creations?
Look, at one of our latest projects has been a collaboration with a Parisian anthropologist called Fanny Paris. Mm. And after a few meetings, a few talks to explore the role of pastry related to the COVID situation, but with a further look, she proposed us 4 pillars to work on. She proposed to work on the slow pastry, the first one, which is not something really new, because look at in Italy, there's a big organization called the Slow Food. And the fact to propose a pastry linked to the territory. We propose in this study, in this project, to, let's say, open the eyes to the chef, saying, if you're based in Barcelona or you're based in Madrid or in the Basque Country or in Amsterdam, you should make a pastry which is linked to the territory to have a kind of a representation of your land in your vitrine. No? And this is this was one of the projects, the slow pastry.
Yeah, so it's really about local. So localized products, localized ingredients.
Voilà, the ultra localization, the use of the flour coming from 2 kilometers from your house, the use of the fresh fruits, the use of the minimization of products coming with the plane, and all these kind of things linked to also the sustainability, but also a local economy. So yeah, this was one of the pillars. The second one, the ultra personalization. So, and this for me, it was like, wow, this is new. It's not new, but for me as a pastry chef, it was like a look at this an opportunity, because today we see that people, but mainly the millennials, for example, they love the personalization. They personalize the phone. And you can personalize this and stuff. And why not personalize pastry? Okay, the personalization of pastry is something that already exists, because if you're married or if you have an anniversary, you can make a dialogue with your preferred pastry chef and they will make something special for you. But the democratization of this personalization in pastry linked to maybe the use of the PPs or the technology in the future, this is something that can be a good attraction for the new customers and the new generations, because they really like to feel special, no?
Yep.
Then the first one, it was the universal pastry. Universal pastry means a pastry for everyone. So more and more we see that when we are in a table with 8 people, some people have some allergies, some other ones decide to be vegan, for example, or another decisions maybe linked to not only a philosophic way of thinking, maybe more to a religion. And then when in a table like this, you ask for a dessert, here it starts a kind of a war and a kind of a deception, because it's really difficult to manage this in a restaurant or in a pastry shop, to have the same, let's say the same or close dessert with more or less the same look and feel, and the same taste and in the same level. Because I have a friend of mine which is celiac, and every time we go to a pastry shop, okay, the pastry shop or in a restaurant, there's always a solution, but it's always like, it's different, no? And
you feel it's not so sexy normally.
It's not so sexy. And you have the sensation that, look at my friend, is like, it's different. So, and in this pillar, we create a collection of products, everyone different from the precedent one, but with the same look and feel, with the same combination of flavors, but everyone linked to lactose-free, the gluten-free. So this was one of the most interesting ones, the universal pastry. And the last one is it was about the nutritious pastry. This is also something new, because people more and more is looking for healthy food. In pastry, look at this is a challenge. But the past years, many people start to make pastry with less sugar, less fat, which is super interesting, which is already something important. But in this pillar, we propose to do this, so reduce the sugar and fat, but increase the nutritious fat. So if you decrease the sugar and fat, at the end, the product start to be empty, no? And what we make it inspired by the Harvard plate, let's say like a pyramid, a nutritional pyramid, we created desserts with less sugar, less fat, but high in proteins, high in fiber, changing the fats for more healthy fats, and always together with a nutritionist. And trust me, Judith, this is fantastic. So the possibility to work with different people, with the different professionals from different disciplines, for me is like a drug.
Yeah, and it's like a dream come true.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So when we talk about healthy food, I see that trend is very important as well, especially during COVID. And I think in the beginning of COVID, a lot of people were indulging. A lot of people were baking. A lot of people were just, you know, passing time. People were bored and they needed just to feel good. And I think sugar still is another way to also feel good, right? It pops your energy, although it's a short time, but it's important. But it's interesting how now, you know, you also see the counter movement that is going more into the health direction, just like you just explained with your project together with Fendi Paris. But how important, when we talk about all of these trends, how important is color in your world and even on a daily basis when you're working on your chocolate or your desserts?
I love aesthetics. I like beautiful things. And I try to make beautiful things through my way of expressing myself, which is paste. And color is essential. It is the first impact. But, you know, you have made me reflect. And before starting the podcast, I have looked at my Instagram gallery and I have realized that I am very boring guy, Judy. The colors of my creations, when you see all together, all the pictures together, are really similar. I suppose it is due to the fact that my star product is chocolate, and chocolate is brown. So there are many browns in my creations, and then some, look at, if you are lucky, you will find some yellow, some red, some green through the use of the pistachio, the matcha tea. But I'm not a big fan of the use of dyes or the use of, let's say, synthetic colors and so on. But maybe I should open my color palette through the use of natural products to have more diversity. Eh? But yeah. You made me think on this. Huh?
That's a good thing because, you know, that's my job, to bring more color in this world. Have you seen the color influences change over the past years in the chocolate market?
A few years ago, there was an explosion in the use of color. You should see the typical collection of macarons with different and very bright colors, and that extended to all kinds of elaborations, chocolates, pastry, etc. Now, let's say that there is a clear setback. And what 5 years ago was seen as something very normal today, to abuse dyes, is seen as something almost, let's say, criminal. Look at, I just finished my new book, and it's a kind of a recopilation. And one of my first projects 5 years ago, it was a collection of bonbons that we present during a gala in the World 50 Best Restaurants Awards. And this was a collection of 5 chocolates with 5 different colors. Today, I see this collection, I feel like, wow, it's not the time to do this. Or minimum, it's time to replace this color for another solutions, let's say more linked to the values that we have today. And it's just 5 years. So something that in the past, it's changing after, let's say, 10, 20, 25 years. Today is going super, super fast.
Yeah. Change is the only constant. And although I sometimes think that society feels that we're stuck, we're not stuck. It's like constantly evolving. And color has that as well. Colors, they evolve, maybe not from 1 year to another year, but yes, in 5 years, there can be a lot of difference. Now, during my podcast with Cacao Barry, we talked a lot about natural ingredients, indeed, just like you were just talking about natural colorants, not using artificial dyes in pastries and chocolate. But I think that automatically means that you are using natural colorants. Am I correct? And how do you foresee this to be important also in the future?
Yeah, by the way, let me say that I love the podcast. And yes, I think there is definitely a trend on the part of consumers toward naturalness in everything, also in colorings. And I really like it what you say during the podcast about the fact that the intensity of color trends it's decreasing here in Europe. I think it's a good tact that should be taken into account by the professionals. More and more, I try to find a way to use natural colors coming from food. And for example, for greens, it's really easy. We have the matcha tea together with chlorella, which is an algae, is fantastic to make, to find a solution in colors. But this is an exception. Eh? There's some green, some red, pink through the beet, for example. At the end, I think that the solution, and it's already coming, will come from the companies. So basically, consumers is asking on this new way of thinking. The people have more compromise on the sustainability, on the natural products, and so on. And at the end, the companies thinking on the egoist in the egoist way, it's just trying to find solution to sell this product to the people. And this is a good news. And I think that this will really change the mentality of our suppliers, which is good for us as a chef.
Where do you get your inspiration, or who inspires you?
A bit from everywhere. The most important thing for me is to have a project. If not, I do nothing, Judith. If I have a project, I automatically activate myself. I'm very responsible. I should say this. Yes, as soon as somebody is telling me, Ramon, you should deliver this in 2 months, or you should start this project, or myself, I have a dream and I decide to start something, then I'm really activate. And I start to explore, to find forms through, look at. First thing for me, before thinking on the taste, and this is a bit strange, but before thinking on the combination of taste or something like this, for me, the first thing is the form. I have in my mind the form of a dessert or a bonbon or new product, then I start with all of the rest. So, first, I try to be inspired seeing the ceramics, the tiles, industrial design. I love the industrial design. I follow a lot of different accounts in Instagram from industrial design. Everything is susceptible that it could be the beginning of an idea.
So ceramics and tiles, that means that you are living in the perfect place. Because to my knowledge, ceramics are, you know, they're basically all, you know, handmade, but especially in Spain, but also in Mallorca. You know, Mallorca is one of these super inspiring places that really go into different textures, different colors, and all natural. So it's beautiful to be inspired by those. Yes.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I try to follow also a lot of websites like Behance and places like this where you see a representation of a lot of different ways of thinking, architecture also, I really like it, architecture. So, yeah. And then I like the clean forms, the cubes, the these kind of forms, also the colors on industrial design. This is something that I want to ask you. In industrial design, always no, but mainly the colors in industrial products like telephones or like objects for home, the color is more and more matte. It's not really brilliant, no? It's not shiny. It's more and more it's matte. And I like matte myself. Yeah. I don't know.
It's true. It's a trend that we have been seeing for a while. So for a couple of years, we had a lot of gloss, so really lucidity. And now we see that matte, it feels a little bit calmer as well. So even if you have a very bright color, if you have a matte finish, it changes the color. But also the beauty is that it changes the touch. Matte, you know, in any type of product that you have in your home, matte feels very nice. It feels soft. And I think because we are not able to touch each other in this moment because of COVID, we are more and we're using a lot of cell phones, computers. So a lot of cold materials, metallics. So I think that's why we are more tapping into the softer touches. So something that feels smooth and matte gives you this touch.
Wow. Look at in chocolate, when we speak about bonbons, if it's in the case of the molded bonbons, because the material of the mold to be produced the mold, we have always a shiny texture. And shiny is like a kind of a competition to see who is able to make the more shiny bonbon. And myself, I like it, but I prefer matte. And matte is seen like, in some cases, like a defect, no? But I really like the matte. And this is interesting what you say.
it's interesting that, so we are both looking into the same inspiration, because obviously I also read Behance. I obviously also look at probably the same Instagram accounts that you are, but then the application is still different. You work obviously in chocolate and I work in color. In your world, matte is sort of seen as a defect. And in my world, it is an enhancement of color. It's funny how that works, right? But it's possible that matte can also now enter your world, you know, because as we just said, change is constant. You talked in a late interview that I saw that you love science, and especially in your field. How do you combine science with the artisan part of chocolate?
Look at science. Help us to understand the way of processes, the ingredients, and to understand many times where the limits are and play with it to finally have more possibilities to play and to create maybe new recipes or new techniques and things like this. In general, let me say that chefs in general love science. And in recent years, this approach to the scientific world has been one of the great things that have happened between cooking and science. Yeah. Not only in pastry, also in cooks. People like Ferran Adrià really open our eyes to have this link with the science. But in chocolate, for example, is something that is key to understand the science of the cocoa butter, for example. Is really important to have the good results. And there's many people years ago already trying to explain this to the chefs. But yeah.
Well, you are also a lucky guy because you were born and raised in Spain, in Catalonia, which is also, if I'm correct, it's where molecular kitchen was born, right? The molecular kitchen is typically Spanish, if I understood right, or at least the best restaurants of molecular cooking are based in Spain, like in San Sebastian, for example.
Yeah. In the past years, and I was lucky because I see all these kind of emerging new kitchen in the past years through the Ferran Adrià, and then with the people from Estrella Can Roca, from the Basque County in the San Sebastian. There's many. Yeah, this kind of let's say Spanish revolution in kitchen. I really see it because at this time. We organize in the academy, in the Chocolate Academy, every year the official seminar of Ferran Adrià. So every year Ferran Adrià closed the restaurant at the end of September, October. And the day after, Ferran comes to our school to explain the full menu of the season to the audience. And this was for like 5, 6, 7 years. And we really see all this moment. And at the end, Ferran, I think that apart than the books and the beautiful recipes, the new techniques, for me, the most important thing is that Ferran think the way of thinking. More than the recipes and all these, let's say, things, Ferran changed the mentality of people. Every year, Ferran, when I arrived to the school, they tell me, "Hello, Ramon, how are you? What you invented this year?" And for me, the first year, they say, "What I invented? Nothing." and he made me think. It's like before with the colors in your case, no? And the year after, he asked me the same. "Ramon, what you invented this year?" And then I said, "Look, we make this. It is the new recipe." So this change of mentality to really start making new things and link it to the creativity, for me, is the most important legacy from Ferran Adrià.
A true innovator, a true person who inspires so many people.
Yeah.
What were the great lessons that you learned in the lockdown of the past time?
The first, how important it is to be in good health and how difficult it is to value and enjoy when we are well. And the second is to discover how fragile we are, how quickly things can change, and that we humans must definitely change our habits if we want to have a better planet. And this is why I think that people really see that sustainability should be the way in the future. And the third, perhaps more personal, is the fact of setting a goal, a dream that activates you every morning to open your computer and start a new project, no? Or take your car, go to your job, and with a happy face start and enjoy working in your job, no? I think that a goal is super important. Have an objective in life. In my case, I think for myself, I really need. When I don't have any objective in mind in the next, let's say in the next month or in the next year, I'm like, I'm boring.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that this is important for the, also for the mental.
Yeah, it's for stretching your mental health as well, to do new things every day, to do something that you've never done before. I think a lot of people have suffered because they've been bored. They have not had a goal or an objective. And I think that's a greater suffering than just being bored, actually. I'm just like you. If I don't have a goal or objective, maybe on a Sunday, it's okay not to have an objective. but generally, yes, if I don't know what I'm going to be doing or what I'm going to be doing next, oy, no, it's a killer.
I think in general, people need to be realized. And yeah, and I think that in your case, it's the same like me. I'm lucky because my job is not a job. At the end, it's my hobby. And this is the first step important in life, no?
Well, because it's your hobby that you turned into a job, you are obviously very keen on education and teaching people all around the world your passion. Color can be used as, of course, innovation, especially for faster mover markets, which is food. You know, you eat it and it's gone. Next. So as a teacher, is this part of your teachings also to your students?
Of course. Color is a tool that helps in the process of, let's say, seducing products towards consumers. But professionals need more information, and here we need your help, Judith. You must create something specific for chefs, because we love colors. We know some basic things about colors, but we don't know. In the same way that more and more chefs is working together with nutritionists to change our recipes, to adapt our recipes to the needs of our consumers, I think that we really need to work in colors. And so this is a message for you, Judith. You should make something.
Okay, message received. Yes, I think definitely we should talk more about this. Yeah, I think indeed you're right. There's more cross-semination of markets that maybe in the beginning you think they have nothing to do with each other, but then yes, they are. And there's more collaboration, which I think is very interesting. Well, when we look at the differences in the many parts of this world where you indeed connect with chefs, but also you teach chefs as well, with regards to trends in pastries and chocolate, but also the use of color and the importance of color in the kitchen, do you see differences in the world?
Well, I believe everywhere in general, there is an interest in making suggestive products in which, let's say, colors plays a main role. Perhaps in Asia, we could say that this interest is more exaggerated. They love colors. Another thing is the change of mentality towards the use of colorants. So one thing is colors, then another thing is the color as ingredient and the use of colorants that comes from ingredients or natural colorants. In this case, in Europe, we can say that there has been a very important change in eliminating, reducing, or replacing some colorants with others, and it is something that we don't see in other places.
Yeah, that's the same as with colors and pigments. You know, when you do for colors for example, industrial products, which you just talked about, Europe is the first one that indeed has a blacklisted, you know, blacklist for colorants. So it's interesting that that's the same also in the food industry. Where is the market of chocolate going in the next year? And how is this related to possibly certain aesthetic choices? So better color choices as well.
There is a trend towards naturalness, transparency, sustainability again. So the launch of World Food Chocolate is a proof of this. It is a chocolate that we created in Cacao Barry, in which all the ingredients come from the cocoa fruit. So sugar, which is normally a product that comes from sugarcane or beet, has been replaced here by the sugar contained in the fresh cocoa pulp from the fresh cocoa fruit. And the result is an innovative product with a fruity zesty flavor that has had great success with the more than 30 chefs who have collaborated in the development of the product, and also with a clear commitment to sustainability, since we give more value to the cocoa fruit through our collaboration with the farmers.
It's a great way forward, and it looks like the future of chocolate and also those who are producing indeed the cacao looks a lot brighter. What are the most important social skills within your profession? What is your advice to young professionals that are listening and that are inspired by you, Ramon?
Well, I don't know if I'm the best one to give advice, but there are three words that honestly have worked very well for me. So the first one is be humble, be curious, and be constant. Be constant, I think that this is key. And it is very simple, but each of these words, just a word, but implies a series of things that make them more important than they seem.
Spoken like almost a true Buddhist, yes. It's interesting that those words indeed are, you know, they're some very simple words, but they have a very large, wide meaning. So talking about humbleness, you have gained a lot of fame over the past years. You were elected Spain's best master of pastry chef in 1997. You wrote a book. You are creative director of an international team of chefs. What's next for you, Ramon? And how do you keep on going and still find passion in your job?
As I said before, it's very simple. I love my job. Like I think like you, Judy. Just a week ago, I just presented a new book, and it was one of the happiest days in the recent years. People congratulate you, it gives you energy. It is like it's a magic sensation. But if I tell you the truth, for me now, it was last week,
yeah.
Just seven days. But for me, it's past. I think it's time to think on the new challenges, no? If I had more time, I would be starting with the next one. My dream now is to start a new book. And I just finished one 7 years ago. But it's something that I really like. It make me happy. It's something magic, because make a book is a way to learn more. Because at the end, you need a phase to explore the theme or something. And then is a time to make the recipes, you know, to create the products, and at the end you have the product itself, you know? So I guess I'm a kind of a weirdo.
No, I think everybody is like that. You know, you get the rush, the adrenaline rush of a new book or a new, like in my case, a new client or a new podcast or a new project, and then after the rush is gone, then you're like, okay, that's done. What's next? What's the name of your book?
The last one is Files, because it's a recopilation book of the most interesting projects from the last 5 years, together with an important new part of with the new recipes that I created during the pandemic. So yeah, and also the book is presented like in files. So it's like 15 different files put it together in the format of book.
Sounds very interesting and sounds like a very creative project. I love talking to you. I'm actually a little bit hungry right now. Just want to be talking about food and chocolate and pastries indeed. But Ramon, this has been a great talk. You have certainly inspired me, and I'm sure you have inspired many of the people that are going to be listening. And I want to thank you for being part of the Color Authority podcast.
Thanks to you, Judith. It's my pleasure. And I hope we can meet each other and maybe do something together in the future. So yeah, super happy.
I love that. Thank you.
Thanks.
So this was Judith Van Vliet from the Color Authority. Thank you for listening again to yet another episode. If you haven't done so, please go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, review, and send us feedback on this episode. And I hope that you will be listening to the next episode coming out very, very soon. Thank you and have an amazing, colorful day.